All right, this is Dwayne from Concord. You're listening to The Morning Roast. Spadoni, the Italians love you.
And if Shasky.
Shasky, you're pretty cool, too.
Well.
Thanks, Dwayne. And does Dwayne know that this segment's brought to you by Golden State, serving the Bay Area for three generations? When you succeed, we succeed. Visit goldenstatelumber.com. Spadoni, Shasky, we're rolling. Talking some gigantes. We'll touch on the 49ers. Don't worry, there's a lot to get into when it comes to the San Francisco 49ers and expectations and where fans are at when it comes to Kyle Shanahan, when it comes to Brock Purdy. Who's going to be the number one wideout for Brock Purdy this year, for God's sakes? Is it going to be Ricky Pearsall? Is that a good thing? Juwan Jennings going to get healthy? Jacob Cowan, can he get healthy? What's going on there? Terry McLaurin, disgruntled, wants to get traded. Oh, by the way, Micah Parsons, he wants to get traded? Oh, you hate to see it for the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, you really do. I mean, Jerry Jones, I mean, I guess Jay-Z's going at him now in Rock Nation? Oh, no. Say it ain't so. Drama and Big D? Yeah, we're not worried about that, though. What we are worried
about is
whether or not to call it Bryce Eldridge, Joey. We doing that? The hot prospect, first-round pick a couple years ago. By the way, the 2023 draft, that's some big names. Obviously, the biggest being, what, Paul Skeens, number one overall, obviously. He's been called up. I'd say he's had a pretty good career thus far. Would you agree? Dylan Cruz, the number two overall pick for the Nats.
LSU teammates.
Awesome. He's a fun player.
Yeah.
Okay, right? Wyatt Langford, another one, top five. He's number four overall to the Texas Rangers. Tough series loss against the Mariners for them, but the Rangers are one of those teams. If they sneak in, I think they do still have World Series potential there if they can get the pitching. Jacob Wilson, number six overall to the A's, obviously an all-star this year.
First ever rookie starting shortstop.
Yep, crazy. And now he's got a fractured, I think, forearm or something. That sucks. But by the way, his teammates, Nicholas Kurtz, looks like he's going to be now the rookie of the year, which is crazy. They got probably the 1 and 2 there. And then you got some other names, Chase Dollander out of the Rockies organization. You got some other guys, the Matt Shaw, Chicago Cubs, Jacob Gonzalez, White Sox. So what I'm saying is here, there has been quite a few of those other first-round picks to make their debuts already in 2023. Not to say that means anything, because you know all teams and situations are different. But when it comes to Bryce Eldridge, 888-957-9570, Giants fans, is now the right time to call up the young rookie phenom? And if not now, why?
So from the 619, you guys should know that if the Giants call up Eldridge before September 1st, they lose a year of his contract. They're not going to call him up before then. It's not factually correct. Okay. The way it works when it comes to service time in Major League Baseball and manipulation, you'll hear this a lot. Like, oh, they don't want to bring him up because they don't want him to hit arbitration. You got to have 172 days on the big league roster. Okay. Now, for a rookie status, for you know, you to be considered your rookie year, basically anything more than 130 at-bats. Mm. Right. So if you have more than 130 at-bats, you don't qualify. So what is the average major leaguer who plays every single day? What do you think they get? Somewhere between 95 and 115 at-bats in a month.
Yeah, it's about
okay?
Right.
Just look at Willy Adames, for example. Just look at his game logs. And, you know, July, there's obviously a week off, so it's going to look a little different. But for the most part, 95 to 110, 115. That's for most everyday players. So if you played him every day, it would be about a month and a half for him to accrue all of his rookie stats. I don't think they're going to do that. I don't think they're going to do 150 at-bats, 140 at-bats. I don't see that. I think that the most likely is they aren't going to call him up until about August 15th, August 20th. That's my personal opinion, if they were. And then the question becomes, like, do you carve out time for him every day? You don't want to call him up and have him sit. You want to call him up and have him play at least a couple of days a week, at least, if not more. Now, the minor league season, I believe, ends on the end of August, hence why you usually have all these September call-ups, and there will be like a AAA playoffs or whatever, but you're basically not worried about service time. He's not going to hit the service time. That's number one. So they're not going to lose a full year. The question is whether he'll be eligible as a rookie or not. And if I'm running the Giants, and again, this is just my algorithm, I would want him to have as much time in his actual rookie season to be able to get those rookie accolades. Now, that seems selfish and PR and marketing driven, but that's how teams view these things.
That's part of it.
Yeah. And also, like, you got nothing to lose if you call him up after, let's just say, August 20th, August 15th, somewhere in that date. So like 2 weeks away, basically. Because, you know, you're not going to lose a year of eligibility. You're not going to lose an entire year of rookie status. And you want to be able to have this guy thrive and get some at-bats and also get a little taste of what it's like in the big leagues and be alongside Chapman and Adames and Devers and just be traveling a little with those guys. You have nothing to lose. So I think that they're not going to call him up right now. They're going to wait until that time, you know, basically comes through.
NorCal Mike on the YouTube chat, and you could weigh in at 888-957-9570, same number to call or text, and also, obviously, YouTube. NorCal Mike, we can't do the Farhan model anymore of rushing up prospects to only give them 25 at-bats for success. It ruined our farm for years. What say you, Joe?
We could point to individual guys and say, like, Wade Meckler probably shouldn't have came up when he did. You know, like, he hasn't really recovered. Does anyone really think Joey Bart was 6 months in the minors away from being the next Gary Carter?
No. He was never going to be the next Buster Posey, quite frankly. We're seeing that right now come to fruition with the Pirates. He's solid, but again, he's been 240. He's a backup catcher probably going forward.
Exactly. Yes. You know, like, was Brandon Belt one extra year in the minors away from being Willie McCovey?
No.
Kind of was what he was, right? Yeah. So, now, it doesn't mean that you can't work on things and come roaring back and be a better player, but I just believe ultimately you're on a trajectory that you're going to be about that kind of a player. And yeah, there are some circumstances and some moments early in your career that can make or break your confidence, send you spiraling. I acknowledge that, but like, you kind of are who you are, you know? And so, I don't really blame Farhan on guys getting called. And the COVID year with Joey Bart, there was no minor league system. You had nothing to lose. He was playing no baseball. So it's either play baseball on the big league team or play no baseball. Yeah, I'm going to play baseball.
Well, and it's also, it's such a unique thing when it comes to baseball compared to like basketball and football, when it comes like confidence. Oh, we blame baseball like teams overall for the lack of confidence within the players. Now there's some of that in basketball. I think we've seen that with the Jonathan Kuminga crisis, saga, whatever you want to call it. Obviously like playing time matters. We understand that. But what's unique to Major League Baseball is we are so scared that these guys' confidence, that they're never going to recover because they struggle. It's a game of failure. We talk about it all the time. I get it. It can fall on deaf ears. It's a game of failure. And if they can't get up off the mat now, maybe they never will. So like, there is an aspect of like, oh, if he goes up there and he's won for his last 24 or whatever, it's like, okay, sure. Then he's going to learn some stuff. Great. That's what happens. I think, I don't know if you sent it. Someone sent it to the chat. Maybe I just stumbled upon it. It was George Brett talking about it when he got first called up. And he was struggling as a rookie in Kansas City. And he's batting like 200, 211, whatever. And, you know, he made one subtle adjustment and it changed everything.
Williams famously came up, scuffled, went back down, and then came back up only to stick forever. Exactly. Willie Mays started off horrible early in. Okay, these are some of the greatest players of all time. You know, like, it's all relative. Does anyone remember what Bobby Witt Jr. did his rookie year?
No. What did he do?
He batted like 250.
But
he showed tremendous promise. He was 20 years old, right? So, like, those things do matter. But, like, nobody remembers exactly what he did. Does anyone remember that Brandon Crawford batted 204 his first full season? 204.
But it was his great defensive play. You started leaning on certain things.
Do you think he would have been a 300 hitter if he stayed one more year in the minors? Does anyone think that?
No.
No. Like, he kind of was what he was. Now, he ended up getting better and better and better and better. And I think that's where I'm betting on not just your traits, physical traits. I think your mental traits. That's when I bank on those. I think they're going to give him a cup of coffee, but I don't think it's now. It's probably another 2 weeks away at minimum. And they're going to bring him up. And see, to me, when you bring him up, just give him opportunities. That's why I think the Wilmer Flores thing for me is a little head scratching, because if Wilmer comes back healthy, Bryce has no spots and no opportunities. Don't call him up at that point, because I don't want him just sitting there.
I mean, Wilmer Flores is 33 going on 34 and he's got a hamstring injury. So like, okay, as we've learned with hamstring injuries, the older you get, the harder it is for it to recover. And speaking of that, I'm 32 and like I woke up with like a sore like abdomen. I didn't even do anything, Joe. I just slept wrong and I was sore.
It's getting old, bro.
It is. It sucks. But with Wilmer Flores, like I would expect something like that to linger. And I would expect potentially, I'm not reporting anything right now, probably an IL stint if it's a hamstring injury, because I don't foresee that just getting better anytime soon. Now, hopefully it's just a tweak and we'll see. But yeah, that's an opportunity. And do you stick him at first base? Do you, you know, try to, you know, go back and forth, him and Devers? Like, the thing with this is, and it makes it tricky, is we have seen a better Devers when he's playing first base. He spoke about it. The team spoke about it. Bob Melvin spoke about it. He just feels more comfortable when he's out there and helping defensively. Yeah, right. There's something to that. And you were on that, and I give you credit for it.
I'm telling
There's
you,
something
dude,
about just being on the field and contributing when your bat's not contributing. And you just feel better mentally. Now, conversely, if I bring up Eldridge and he's just going to be a DH guy and he's not struggling at the plate,
yeah,
that's going to hurt his mentals, because he just saw it with Rafi Devers, who's way more accomplished in the bigs than a guy like Bryce Eldridge is, right?
You don't want him living and dying on every at-bat.
No.
And you want him to be able to go out into the field and kind of lose himself in the situation of the moment defensively. I think there's just something to be said for calming yourself. Like, all right, it's first and third in this situation. We're going to, you know, hold the runner on at first. Maybe we're going corners in. We're looking for a bunt. Like, you're taking all of the pressure of the at-bat, because we know how psychological it can get. Very much like putting or kicking in the NFL. You can get in your own dome at the plate, and it is a mental craziness. Yes. The difference between 3 out of 10 and 2 out of 10, I mean, we're not a major leaguer, could be a Hall of Famer. Like, that's the difference. One at-bat.
It's pretty crazy.
It is crazy. The margins are razor thin in baseball.
By the way, you are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGNZ FM and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station, and the home of the Golden State Warriors and Valkyries, always live on the free Odyssey app, and coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios, which is righteously brewed in San Francisco.
So like on the Eldridge thing, if they call him up, let's just say hypothetically today, well, he will not accrue an entire year of, you know, the pre-arbitration. Basically, any player that you call up, you control their rights for up to 6 years, 3 years pre-arb and then arbitration after. It's basically they get to negotiate with a mediator to get the money on the arbitration. That's for those that don't know.
I hate that's a thing. Just the whole.
Well, it's too long to get to free agency. Yeah, that's number one. But so you're not losing a year of team control is what I'm getting. And if you call them, even if you call them up today, but the question then becomes like, all right, do you have playing time for them? And do you want to exhaust his rookie status? Because if you played him every day from here till the end of the year, he'll probably get 150, 160 at-bats, which would make this his rookie year. I don't know if I'd want to do that.
Bryce Eldridge, is he like the most kind of tantalizing talent here in the Bay when it comes to just, I need to see more of player X? It's Bryce Eldridge. Because for a lot of people, you know, I'm Sharks withstanding. I love the Macklin Celebrini fans. I love all of you. I get it. Highly touted prospect. It's hockey, all right? And I'm not disparaging any Sharks talk. I'm not. I love it. 60 Second Celebrini. It's one of our greatest segments we have here at 95.7 The Game. We shoehorn it in when we can. But Bryce Eldridge, I feel like he's such a larger-than-life person because he's such, like, he's Aaron Judge over here. He's 6'7". I'm not saying he's Aaron Judge, but the size, again, I'm going Bobby Fitz. Size matters here. And he would just give me a reason, like, what's the reason I'm going out to watch a Giants game right now?
Rafi Devers.
Size matters.
But Joe, he hasn't really been doing it at home. Like, that's part of this. So when I
Joe, they had 38,000 on a Tuesday against the freaking Pirates. The attendance has not been a problem this year.
Okay, but how much of that was there a Carson Wisenhunt that called up their top pitching prospect?
Yeah, but that was on Monday. They've had some great crowds.
Okay.
I've been as surprised as any regarding the amount of people. It was packed when I went on Monday night.
And you know
it's
what?
The Pirates.
And you know what? Maybe going forward, but the Pirates are somewhat of a brand, right? They're like, well, how many Pirates fans were there?
Not many.
Not many. Okay.
I mean, right. I saw a couple jerseys, but like, Joe, the Pirates are one of.
I know. They sucked my entire life. I know.
They had 22 consecutive losing seasons.
I know. I told you my whole life, basically.
Since 2017, there are 7 teams that have been in the playoffs once, and there's only one team that has not been in the playoffs at all, and that's the Pirates.
You know,
all of baseball.
You know what my favorite Pirate was? Is the all-time nickname Jason Grilly. Grilled cheese, baby. Remember that name? Yeah, Carter's chuckling back there. All-timer. But I'll say this, and you're right. Maybe it's not going to be the end-all, be-all when it comes to attendance, and I'm not even trying to say that. But if I'm a Giants fan, and I just saw what the team did last week, and I know you're not saying they're selling. Some people may view it that way, though. They didn't buy anything. I don't know if Buster Posey's a big believer that this team's going to go on a huge run. Those dog days, man, late August, September, when I'm all in on the NFL, Just give me some Bryce Eldridge. I would be shocked, though. Like, if like at September, at the very least, I think he wasn't a call. He needs to be a call-up.
Yeah, I think they're... Well, again, like the AAA season's going to expire, and then they're going to have an opportunity to just bring him up.
Risotto, you got in my ear. Well, when's the season end, AAA?
Yeah, the season of the minor league baseball ends September 21st.
Oh, it's that late
now? Yeah, it's late.
Why it did used to be the beginning of September, but then they moved things back.
They moved things back. There you go.
Is that going to change anything?
I mean, I don't know.
It shouldn't. I mean, God love whoever's trying to compete for AAA titles that I don't even... Is it the AAA World Series? Is that what they call it? I don't even know what they call it.
Oh,
they
do. Yes. I think that it's going to go Luciano first before we see Eldridge.
Okay.
And I think you're going to give Lucia a look. I just don't know where you're going to put Luciano right now. He doesn't have a position.
By the way, any prospects I should be excited about from this past haul that we got last week? Anyone?
Well, the Mets center fielder guy, who is a young guy from Tennessee that, if you follow college baseball, he's been a good player.
Okay.
You know?
Is that the one?
Drew Gilbert is his name.
Drew Gilbert.
Pretty good.
Okay, two first names. Don't know if I love that, but we'll discuss. Just saying, Papa Spadoni always told me, if you have two first names, can't really trust you.
Tom Brady?
Yeah, but he's got like four first names. Thomas Edward Patrick Brady, right? No, Brady's not a first name.
What are you talking about?
Brady Quinn? That's it. Like, you don't know any other Bradys. Okay. Come on. Name me five Bradys that you know. It's not really a first name. It's not a traditional first name, right? It's not.
That's a first name, dude.
Yeah, no, like, not. I don't know
you
what.
You can't
like,
name five people.
He's like the greatest football player who ever lived.
Brady?
That's Tom
not a,
Brady.
No, Brady is not a first name is what I'm saying. You can't name me five people that are famous. Their first name is Brady. Stop. It's Brady Quinn and that's it. Yeah, exactly. Crickets from all of you.
You named it, not us. I mean,
I'm just saying it's not a traditional one. 888-957-9570. Number to call or text. We won't get into the 49ers. Speaking of football, it was very... I haven't seen a lot of just Tom Brady like in Raider gear. And the 49ers are going to be facing off against the Raiders in joint practices next week. In Henderson, Nevada. That's going to be very fun. Always a good time there. Niner fans love just their preseason trip now to Vegas. Just get that in. Just an excuse to go to Vegas, right?
Well, Vegas right now, I don't know if you guys have been paying attention. The basically, it's not as busy as they're accustomed to.
Oh, it's a down summer for Vegas?
For whatever reasons, they're saying things are down.
Fees. Yeah, because it's expensive.
Well,
like, and it's always
and everyone
been,
can gamble anywhere now.
I was at the Circa. Who does the Newarka.
Was Goop there?
What?
Is that where he is today?
There's
the best drop there is.
There's always a drop for Goop.
Is the Circa the one with the big sports bar and the pool? They have the huge, all the screens there?
No, that's Stadium Gamble or something.
No, I think Circa has one like that, though. Not because we've done, you know, some stuff with them here in 95.
I'll look into it, Spadoni.
Thanks. Get on that for me. Oh, I'd like to go there. I got, tan's not the right word. I did go over to the Carmel Valley Ranch Club last week. My brother's a member there, so it's very nice. I know you and the Olympic Club. Carmel Valley Ranch Club, very fancy. It was very nice.
Oh, I know. Carmel's very, very nice.
It's very nice. It was like 75 degrees, a slight breeze.
Say hi to Clint Eastwood? Or
no, Clint's not. He's getting old, buddy. He's got to be lathered up in sunscreen if he's out there, for God's sakes.
You kind of roll him out. I don't know if you lather him up.
Oh, my God.
What? I'm being real. He's got to be 93.
He's got to be. I think he's older than that. By the way, did you know that he was formerly the mayor of Carmel? Did you know that?
Yes, hence why I said Clint Eastwood.
Well,
yes.
He just lives, like a lot of like famous people live out there.
No, but like when I think of Clint Eastwood, one of the first little like nuggets is mayor of Carmel quite a while.
Okay, well, you know, not everyone knows that. That's why I say that. Yeah. So, but... we were out there and I did not put on the SPF because I don't do that a lot. I put a little bit on, but I know I'm going to be inside a lot. And I'm like a vampire when it comes to this time of the year. I'm going to be watching a lot of football. I'm going to be inside. It's okay. So I need to get my SPF. I need to absorb my vitamin D and get all that kind of that coat on me. And I got burn on my shoulders and it's been peeling and it's very, I'm very itchy right now. This is my flu game today. I'm fighting through it right now, Joe. It hurts. I'm hurting, all right? I'm hurting. Is Carlos and San Mateo hurting, though? He wants to join the conversation. All it says here in the description says, the roast got me through the last year. Oh, interesting. Carlos.
Hi, Carlos.
I'm happy we were able to do that.
Hey, what's up, guys? I just wanted to give you guys a shout-out. It's my first day at work today, and I was out of a job for the past year and a half. And you guys got me through the mornings, highs and lows, Warrior season, Niner season. And, yeah, you know, I might not be listening to you guys every day now, but I just wanted to give you guys a shout-out.
I'm sorry that happened to you, and I'm glad that you bounced back on your feet, and I hope that we could have provided some sort of, just therapeutic laugh or scream or whatever to just kind of take your mind away, because there's nothing worse than that crazy stress of not knowing where the next dollar's coming from.
No, it's not fun. That was Carlos and San Mateo. My heart goes out to you, buddy. Absolutely. And I'm
rooting for you.
Again, that's awesome to hear, as school is now going to be back in session. So shout out to all the teachers out there, obviously. Shout out to all the nurses, the doctors, everyone getting up super early. And by the way, this is my PSA, as school's getting back in about a week or this week, whatever. We need to do away with summer reading. It needs to go away. You should not be quizzing kids the first couple days of school. You want to build trust and faith and want a kid to be excited to go back. They shouldn't be anxious the last couple weeks because, oh, I need to squeeze in a book report or I need to be reading all these books and catching up. No, no, no. Summer is about just relaxing and chilling and just zoning out and being with your friends and being on the baseball diamond, Joey. All right. Why are you looking at me like that?
I think one of the worst things that you could do as a child in this era that we're in is be on your phone and on video games all summer.
I didn't say that.
No, I know, but I'm all for the reading. If because there's a lot of kids that don't get out and play sports and stuff, that's fine. You can do a lot of different things. You got to get off the television. You got to get off the video games. You got to get off your phone. No, you really do. I was going to go in a different direction. I just think, and I know that there'll be a time where I'll want my kid back in school right away. This thing that school starts in the first week of August is the most ridiculous thing I have ever seen in my life.
I think that's
it's got to be after September, like after Labor Day. What are we doing?
That's more of a private school thing that I've learned. Public schools almost always start in the first couple weeks of August because they have more breaks than they like. Because they have like fall break. They have like more breaks than I think the private schools do, which start usually at Labor Day, as you're mentioning.
Joe, right down there, in the South, some of the colleges started in July. It's out of control. No, that's out of control. It should be Memorial Day to Labor Day. Why is this overthought? It's straightforward. That is summer. We have shortened August, which might be the best month of the entire summer. And it's,
August?
Yeah, yes. August is amazing.
August sucks. Let's just call it what it is. August is not the best month of the summer.
I just think it starts way too early. It should be Memorial Day to Labor Day. I don't know why this is up for negotiation.
By the way, happy birthday to my brother Anthony, who I was just referencing. It was his birthday yesterday.
Happy birthday.
I don't know how old he is. Yeah. He's 38, 39, something like that. I honestly don't know how old most of my siblings are. Is that bad? I got 9 of them. Okay. No. That's good. Am I a bad sibling? I don't know. I don't know most of their birthdays, actually. Or the year that they were born. I know like 4 of them. Yeah. This just tells me what I am about a sibling, I guess. 888-957-9570. Matt Lively joining us in the 9 o'clock hour. It's actually a great last name because he is a Lively guest that we have on KPIX, Channel 5, sports broadcaster there. And he has been down at Levi's Stadium. And we'll talk shop when it comes to the 49ers. Starting joint practices, Joe. And do you want to get back in to the 49ers on the other side? Because there's a player out there that the Niners need to go after. Because I'm concerned about the wide receiver group right now. Ricky Pearsall is going to be my number one heading into week one. I don't know about that. We'll get into it on the other side. It's going to be brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. And also by Crystal Geyser, Alpine Spring Water. And it's 2-0 in the count.
No! Hey, this is Jonathan from San Francisco. You're listening to The Morning Roast with Joe Spadoni and Joe Shasky.
You really are, Jonathan. You really are. By the way, Matt Lively, 9 a.m., 9 o'clock hour, Matt Lively, KPIX, CBS sports broadcaster there, talking some Niners who are going to be starting joint practices with the Denver Broncos Thursday as their first preseason game starting on Saturday at Levi's Stadium. So that will be fun to get into at 9 o'clock with Matt Lively. Matt's also been covering the Golden State Valkyries, who had a tough loss yesterday, but they are 14-14 on their inaugural season, and I do think they are going to be playoff bound. The loss of Caleb Thornton's tough, but if they could get like get a home playoff game at Chase Center, at Ballhalla, I'm telling you, man, it's a vibe. It was fun. And dare I say, if they get a home playoff game there, it would be Rorical kind of levels. And I don't say that lightly.
Oh my God.
You've been to a game this year, right? Haven't you?
Yes.
There's something that's different about it. I don't know how to quantify it. I don't know if it's, the diversity in the crowd, what have you, but I have never seen an expansion team, let alone a WNBA team, this beloved.
Well, the Vegas hockey team kind of created its own life.
You know, that's a good one. No, that's absolutely a good one. I think them winning early on too helped in that.
Yeah, it was just its own like thing. And it was very odd.
By the way, I saw, and they were playing the Valkyries when I went a couple weeks ago. They were playing the Dallas Wings, and Paige Becker's obviously their first overall pick out of Connecticut. She's got a huge following. The amount of just UConn fans that were in the crowd cheering her, whatever she did, was insane. It was awesome.
Yeah. It's very difficult for an expansion team to kind of gain notoriety. You know, it takes some time. So, I remember when the Marlins were originally a thing, and the Diamondbacks, the Panthers, and the Jaguars.
Well, I want to ask, because you were a kid when the San Jose Sharks became a team. Like, what was that like when you were a kid?
Like, you got to understand, it was a whole new sport to an area that very rarely see snow.
Northern California, outside of Lake Tahoe and Shasta, right? Yeah.
I'm not a diehard hockey guy, but I've got multiple friends that are like crazy obsessed.
Yeah.
My boy Matt, Rocco, like, because these guys all grew up rollerblading and playing hockey too. Okay. You know, I didn't rollerblade. I wasn't a rollerblader. So I was the kid on, you know, just tennis shoes on the blacktop playing with those guys, and they were all into hockey big time.
Rollerblading was sick, like in the late 90s. There's this Disney Channel original movie called Brink. Dude. Be a soul skater. Remember that, Carter? He's smiling back there.
I don't think you rollerblade at 6'8".
No. Well, back then he wasn't 6'8". He's probably like 5'11".
It's like
when
watching
he was like
a giant, you know, bear ride a tricycle.
It's who's my guy? Zdeno Chara. I'm probably butchering his.
What
first
is going
name.
On here?
The hockey player who's like 6'6", but on skates he's like 6'9". He's like just this imposing figure. That's probably what Carter looked like in rollerblades. Well, I'm not mad at it. 888-957-9570. I'm also not mad right now about Brock Purdy, because by all accounts he's looking great. He's dicing it up. He's looking like he's supposed to. He's looking like a quarterback that is the highest paid player in the history of the franchise. He's been consistent, limiting the mistakes, and by all accounts, when it comes to all the beat reporters, Brock Purdy's been looking good. Great. That's all we need, right? That's all I want to see. That being said, I do find it curious, and you brought this up on the call yesterday, Joe, as we take a peek inside of the 49ers training camp. The conversation around Brock Purdy is pretty quiet. There's not really any consternation from the fan base when the last couple years, hell, last decade really, all the conversation has been about the quarterback. All the drama, all of the concern, Kaepernick, Alex Smith, Trey Lance, Sam Darnold, now Brock Purdy, Jimmy Garoppolo, what is going on? It's all pretty quiet. What do you make of that?
I think there's a variety of things. I remember when Jimmy Garoppolo came back off of the 2019 Super Bowl loss and got hurt, and the team just so underperformed. People were done with Jimmy, just done with him. And I think part of it was also the way Shanahan and him argued about whether he could return or not at the end of that year. And like, I'll just give you the 2020 stats. He played in six games in 2020. Now, remember, it was that COVID year. He was 3-3. Seven touchdowns, five interceptions. Not good. It just wasn't good.
No.
And there was obviously talk about Tom Brady and whether they should get him. Tom Brady goes on to win the Super Bowl that year. There was a lot that was into it. But last year was a bad year for Brock passing-wise. I went back and I watched every single game for the first 12 games. I even have all my notes right here.
You watched every single way?
Yeah, the first 12 games. I did five last week. I did seven this last weekend.
God. You're insane.
Yeah, and I just made all my notes. I wanted to rewatch everything.
I say that in a good way. Like,
I'm going to get ready for the year.
Yeah.
I just think that if we're being fair, the team wasn't good last year. But also, Brock didn't play great.
No.
He just didn't. And I think that we could twist ourselves in pretzels explaining why. He held onto the ball a long time, and I didn't think that he was decisive when throwing, and it looked like he threw up a lot of 50-50 balls, and he ran around a lot by design, meaning because of the way that the offensive line was awful, but also I just thought he held onto the ball. He didn't trust his guys. His year wasn't a great year.
There was clearly a lack of trust there, and part of the reason why, as you're alluding to right now, he held onto the ball for so long is guys weren't getting open.
No.
There was zero separation. He didn't have Ricky Pearsall out there for a majority of the season. Christian McCaffrey was not out there. Deebo Samuel, when he was out there, was not getting separation because, oh, by the way, that's not what he does. He's not an elite route runner. And he's lost a step a little bit last year. And then Brandon Ayuk, obviously, lost him after the first few weeks. And you had to rely on Juwan Jennings, another guy who, again, cannot create separation, uses his big body. And again, that's going to be an interesting conversation a little bit later on, too, this wide receiver core. But with Brock, yeah, you're right. You look at 20 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. He was coming off a 31 touchdown, 11 pick MVP type of campaign. So when people try to tell me that he actually thought he looked better at times last year, I just don't believe that.
His legs were his best attribute, but I also thought that he overused them.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense whatsoever. Like, yes, those were his best attributes to moving the chains, but I also think that he just held the ball way too long.
He ran out of a lot of trouble, but he ran into more trouble because of the legs, if that makes sense. So he did a little bit of both because of, you know, the lack of separation. He felt like he had to create more often than not, and he got himself into trouble.
Yeah, and I think that the offense saw that. They missed CMC bad.
Bad.
You know, they really did. And, like, the Ayuk thing, like, Ayuk got hurt in October, like mid-October.
Yeah.
So, you know, Ayuk was there for the Viking loss where Darnold outplayed you. He was there for the Rams loss. He was there for the game against the Patriots where you should have put the Patriots away 4 or 5 different times. Rewatch the Patriots game. The Patriots might be one of the worst teams you have ever seen on offense in terms
awful.
Of personnel.
They were awful.
Awful. And he threw some bad forced red zone picks. And Kittle made maybe the best catch of his life in that game. I guess where I'm going at is it is surprising to me. Off the year he just had, no one thinks he sucks. That's not what we're talking about. No one says he sucks, but he just got paid a lot of money. And it does feel like there is absolutely zero concern about the quarterback. And I'm just going to tell you, if he goes 6-9 again this year after getting the money that he got, like, well, forget 6-9. Joe, if he comes out week one against Seattle and Darnold ends up somehow, whatever happens, they beat him. They beat him 3-0 in a defensive struggle. If you don't think we're going to field calls for 5 straight days about the quarterback, I think you're tripping. And I find it fascinating that, not that he's flying under the radar, there's just no Brock Purdy talk from the fans, from the media, from anybody.
What are the expectations for Brock Purdy this year? Like, what are the legit expectations that Niner fans are looking for? Is it just the win-loss record? Because that's not a quarterback stat for me.
No, but we lived
in the Jimmy Garoppolo era. We cannot – wins and losses are not a quarterback stat. They're just not.
No, but, like, do you win games is a part of it.
Did we not learn anything from Jimmy G? Did we not learn anything from Jimmy – because we played this game. We played it. It's a team sport.
Yeah, no, I know, but it also
things
like,
have to work well around
managing the game is an important factor as well. Like I think it's somewhere in the middle. Like, are all interceptions on the quarterback?
No.
Okay. Just like all wins and all losses aren't all on the quarterback. It's a part of it. And managing games, there is a skill to that.
Yes. I just don't like when we always go to quote unquote, he's a winner. He just finds
a way.
Well,
that's too black and white.
We lived in that for so long.
That's too
with
black
Jimmy
and white. I agree.
And I'm just not here for that. I'm not. But this is interesting because, you know, Carter gets in my ear, producer Carter. He's like, I just text you a little nugget. And this is, you know, I do love football because we get comparisons like this. And what is this? BetMGM posted this, and it's the last two seasons, and it's a graphic of Patrick Mahomes and Brock Purdy. And they're just comparing stats.
Okay.
This is the last two seasons of Mahomes and Brock Purdy. Patrick Mahomes, 53 touchdowns. Brock Purdy, 51. Interceptions, Patrick Mahomes, 25. Interceptions, Brock Purdy, 23. All right, so pretty close there. Yards, 8,100 for Patrick Mahomes, 8,100 for Brock Purdy. Completion percentage, 67% for Patrick Mahomes, 67% for Brock Purdy. Their passer rating, though, 93 for Patrick Mahomes, 104.4 for Brock Purdy. So the last two seasons, I mean, outside of touchdowns, which Patrick Mahomes has two more of, Brock Purdy and those other stats and categories, he's outperforming Patrick Mahomes. I mean, Brock Purdy, better than Mahomes? Stop. Like, but I guess what you're trying to say is here, if you're just putting that, he actually hasn't been as bad as people thought last year. I was like, no one's saying he was bad last year.
But he also wasn't great.
He wasn't great. And I actually don't think Patrick Mahomes has been all that great the last couple seasons. He's had individual great moments, and he has great plays. And when you need him to be great, more often than not, he is. And that's why he is the best quarterback in the NFL. Like, and I get it, because his stats aren't going to back that up. But if you're drafting a team right now, who are you taking? Patrick Mahomes or Brock Purdy? Stop. Like that's not even a question. Exactly. So that's why when I bring these things up. Well, that's why I bring these things up, because I get sent to them and he's not a top 10 quarterback. But you can't just look at the stats all the time. You can't look at the stats all the time. You look at the player, and that's what you were doing when you were doing the deep dive on Brock last year, and you saw a player that looked indecisive at times, that ran too much, that tried to squeeze in tight fitting areas. And he couldn't do it.
There was a lot of 50-50 balls, especially early in the season. You know, Juwan Jennings actually came down with a bunch of 50-50 balls that, I mean, they were total WTF throws, where you're like, dude, why would you make that throw in that spot right there? And then Jennings comes down with it, and you don't think twice about it. You're like, oh, what a great play by Jennings. Like, bad decision. So Albert Breer, you know, went to Niner camp, and he did a kind of like a sit down with a lot of different people behind the scenes. And I guess the Niners cut up a bunch of film for Brock Purdy, and they basically said, like, hey, you were doing a little too much. And here were the plays where we felt like you were doing too much. And I think that's a refreshing thing to see. Like, you know, Brock's still young. The coaching staff and him, you know, obviously you want to push him to be better. And I would argue that, like, you know, their offensive line has got to be better this year. And I think that they acknowledge that. Trent Williams being in camp early will hopefully help them. You know, when you watch the first quarter of the season, Trent Williams looked terrible.
Yeah. He looked like a guy that missed camp.
So, like, as bad, like, you're talking about wins and losses, not being a quarterback set, sure. These stats, these 20 and 12, I mean, in touchdowns, interceptions, when your Hall of Fame left tackle plays like an average player, like, that is really going to do in your offense when your offensive line is predicated on him being an elite player. So I think that's important that he bounces back this year. I'm talking about Trent Williams. But I just think overall that Brock Purdy, the conversation is interesting, and or the lack thereof, I find to be interesting. I'm pumped for him this year. I think this is a big year for him. I think this is a big year for Kyle. I think it's a big year for the offense. Are you CMC reliant? Can you only be a dynamic next level player because of how great CMC is? Or, you know, if CMC isn't what we think he is from years past and you're still a really, really good team, well, then we could push that to the side. Are you reliant on Kyle Shanahan? Are we able to, you know, have a dynamic offense with a bunch of no-name wide receivers? The hallmark of what makes the Bradys and the Staffords and Mahomes is they still win games no matter who the playmakers are around them.
Correct. And you look at that Chiefs team, in hindsight, because they got absolutely clapped against the Eagles, like, skill position player-wise, they just weren't even on the same, they weren't even on the same wavelength as the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, you look at the names, Saquon, A.J. Brown, right? Hell, the quarterback himself is a playmaker on the with his own right on the field, running the ball, and Jalen Hurts, even though his knee and whatever. Devontae Smith, right? They just had so many guys left and right. Like, the fact that Mahomes took that squad all the way through, you know, the Buffaloes of the world, the Ravens of the world, back to another Super Bowl and tried to three-peat it just speaks to the quarterback himself, who looked mortal. And it was very jarring because Niner fans are like, wow, that's the guy that usually gets the job done at the end of the day. No, he got his ass kicked. That was only the second time we saw that. And the first time was against Tampa Bay a few years back in that COVID year, as you mentioned, when he didn't have any starting tackles in his offensive line. Let's go out to the calls because people are interested in this conversation. 888-957-9570. What should the expectations be for Brock Purdy at the end of the season? And how much should be on his shoulders this year? Because quite frankly, they can't be CMC reliant. Like, I think we're going to find out in year one, Joe, when it comes to this Brock Purdy contract, if it's a success or not. Like, I think year one, we're going to find that out real quick, because if Ricky Pearsall is going to be his number one wide receiver, you got Jennings hurt with the calf, you got Brandon Ayuk out for the first couple weeks probably of the season, right? Jacob Cowing, I don't know. Like, you're around the Jordan Watkins of the world. By the way, we're going to get into getting Terry McLaurin because they need to badly after getting some of these calls, but we're going to find out a lot about Brock Purdy in this contract year one, I believe, and whether it's going to be a success.
Yeah, I think the Brock thing that's interesting is I challenge people, go back, if you want to like have a legitimate conversation, go back and watch the games. At times he was good, and at times he wasn't good. And I thought that for the algorithm of Brock, meaning he was so great the year prior, it was down year. That doesn't mean that he wasn't a successful player at times, but I think that he would admit in the second half of games, it wasn't as dynamic as we wanted. And I thought that in particular, there were a lot of areas that they need to clean up. And I think it starts with the quarterback holding the ball a little.
Let's clean up the phone lines. Mark in San Francisco wants to join us. 888-957-9570. Mark, what's your thoughts on the Niners, man? Good morning.
Well, I think that game against Detroit should have confirmed to you guys that Brock Purdy can win, right, even coming from behind. There's nothing wrong with Purdy. He's a great quarterback, man. Let him, give him his just due, right? He worked hard. He was, remember, the last guy picked in the draft. That's irrelevant. No one even knew he was going to be as good as he is, right? We know we win Super Bowls with defense, however. And so the team has to just come together, defense first. Offense will show up, right? The offense will show up. Now, you remember, you missed the best running back in football. You didn't have Ayuk. You didn't have Deebo Samuels last year. He was, like, trying to carry the team all by himself. The defense was all jacked up behind the coordinator, whoever he was. So give us a shot this year. I think we'll be much better, especially with those D linemen, linebackers, coaching, that coach that has all the wisdom, that DB coach, right? And, of course, Shanahan knows how to put the offense together. 49ers aren't in trouble. They know what they're doing. Man, they've been to 19 NFC championship games, and you can't say that they don't know what they're doing. They're a good team. I've been around since 1972 watching these 49ers, wow. Right? Been through the Monty Clark years, been through, who's the guy's name, Joe Thomas?
Yeah.
Giants or 49ers? That's Joe Thomas, huh?
Well, Joe Thomas, the offensive lineman for Cleveland Browns?
He's talking about Joe Thomas, 1970s 49er head coach.
Oh, excuse me. Okay.
Right before Bill Walsh.
Gotcha. All right. That was good. Hey, he's fired up, man. Don't doubt the Niners. I don't think either of us, by the way, are doubting the 49ers.
Their defense was awful.
Yeah, there were
No. The personnel was awful. They almost, by accident, you should have a better defensive personnel. Well, but I think the number one thing is like, their defense coordinator also... The personnel decisions he made, playing Devondre Campbell as much as he did, I challenge anyone to watch even the 10-minute cutups, not the 45 every single snap. I'm talking 10-minute cutups. Devondre Campbell and 22 Isaac Yiannam were picked on over and over and over and over again.
He mentioned that Detroit Lions game, and that was ended up being the last game that Brock Purdy played in the regular season.
I think he was talking about the NFC Championship game, Detroit comeback.
Well, I thought he said last year, too, but because he did actually have like a good offensive game overall. I know he had a couple picks.
Two horrific fourth quarter picks.
He did. I thought there was miscommunication on at least one of those. It was weird. It was like a ball that was
Brian Branch and the other guy.
I know, but there was one of them I want to recall that I know you watched the most recently that was not on Purdy, but I hear you there. They did put up 34 on the team, the Detroit Lions, who was one of the best teams in the NFL.
No, but their defense was also at the end of the year.
It was awful.
No one can name a player on their personnel.
They didn't have Aiden Hutchinson. They didn't have anyone, right?
Yeah, and I'm not taking it away. It's just that was a tough one. The second halves, when you watch them back, like they weren't great. They weren't great. And that's, you want to talk about like Mahomes. Where does Mahomes separate himself? Why do all the numbers for Mahomes become completely irrelevant? Because in the fourth quarter, when he has the ball, it's the fear of God in you.
Yes.
And you think that this guy's going to find a way to make things happen. They had, I don't know if you guys saw it, but they had the fourth quarter in overtime cut up all over the internet that was making the rounds. And it was about Steve Wilkes and some of the things that he did. I'm talking about the Super Bowl.
Oh, God.
Mahomes used his legs on so many plays. There was a second and 14. He ran for a first down. There was obviously the big fourth and one where he ran the read zone option or whatever the hell they call that, where Bosa went biting on it. Mahomes was unbelievable. He wasn't unbelievable in the whole game. It's just situationally, he put so much pressure on you with his arm and his legs to make a decision and make a play in space. He picks you apart. He's amazing.
I mean, it's in any sport, right? The guy could be 0-for-5 heading into a final at bat, the extra innings, bottom of the ninth. You know, you would hope a Rafi Devers turns into this guy, or you know, an Aaron Judge or Shohei. You just know, oh, he's due. He'll hit one, and then the game's over, right? Basketball. Oh, Steph's having a bad game, but fourth quarter comes around, last couple minutes, hits a couple of Curry flurry there. Night sealer. That's what the great ones do when they don't have their best stuff, but you can still lean on them at the end of a game. Can Brock Purdy be that player this next year? I still think that remains to be seen. When everything's not going right around him, can he separate himself? I think at times he did last year, but the defense ultimately was not good enough. And I think you're alluding to the right
and the offense.
And the offense.
And the other element, which we haven't brought up.
And special teams.
Joe, they were terrible. But the watching it, I told these guys last week, watch the first five games, I'd have fired the special teams coach after 5 weeks. I'm actually surprised it wasn't more of a conversation. Jake Moody missed a field goal to go up 10 against the Rams. I know we wanted to run Ronnie Bell out of town. And look, Ronnie Bell stunk. Okay, so I'm not caping up for Ronnie. Ronnie Bell, catch the ball, right? There's no doubt. If Jake Moody hits a field goal, then none of that stuff happens at the end. None of that stuff. And then they gave up a huge punt return. I mean, there was the fake punt early in the game when you're up 14-0 on the Rams. The special teams coach should have been fired 5 games into the season.
Well,
no, it's a joke.
That's been the dark cloud over Kyle Shanahan's tenure. Special teams has sucked. It has. I know Robbie Gould was a consistent kicker. I'm talking about special teams as a whole.
Yeah.
When it comes to kickoffs, when it comes to punt return coverage, when it comes to all of it, it has just not been good enough, and it bothers me when the head coach doesn't take it seriously.
Yeah,
in the comments, and he hasn't, and he really continues not to. Now he got the guy that Rob Saleh had over in New York, and he's been with the Jets
Brett
for a while.
Boyer.
Sure, great.
Brett.
I hope I don't know his name going forward, because that means like if out of sight, out of mind. I don't want to know the guy's name. It's kind of like offensive linemen. Like certain, like when I don't hear your name, usually it's a good thing for the most part. I don't want to know the special teams coach name for that matter, but. You know, can that be a strength for you this year? That would be a huge bonus. By the way, what's going on, Greg Joseph? I see Matt Maiocco tweeting about it. Oh, Greg Joseph, he made all his field goals. Oh, Jake Moody didn't make all of his. Are we doing that, really?
Yeah.
That's what we're doing? Let's just wait for the preseason games. We'll find out this Saturday, all right? We'll find out.
I think it all mattered. I mean, like, again, he went week one, he was awesome. Week two.
You got it? Yeah.
Week two, a horrible kick. I mean, I'm talking about punter as well.
Wischnowski? He's gone. He's out of sight, out of mind. We don't got Mitch no more.
And then the special teams in the Rams game gave up a fake punt return, and a huge missed field goal to go up 10. And then I go to the Patriot game, and he missed one in that one. I mean, just the special teams in that game was so bad.
Did he hit a bunch of field goals, though, week two?
No, like, week one, he hit six.
I thought he went back-to-back 20-point fantasy games, because Steiny drafted him in the first round, and I was starting to think it was a good pick.
The week two loss.
Oh, my God. Did he draft? He did not draft.
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
13-7. He did hit two field goals. And Mason got a touchdown, so went to 23-13. No, he had extra points. It was 20-7 at one point in week two against the Vikings. Remember, they had two consecutive turnovers at the goal line, the Vikings did. One, Fred Warner made one of the plays of the year. The other one, Aaron Jones on the screen pass, fumbled on the one. Yeah. They should have won that game 30-7, the Vikings.
His first miss came in week three against the Rams. Obviously, they ended up losing by 3 points in that one. That was brutal.
It would have went up 10. That game would have been over.
And you're in SoFi Stadium, which is, I know it's not a dome per se, because they have like air that travels through there, but it's a dome. All right. It's indoors. Like, let's relax, people. And then his worst game by far was at Tampa Bay. The winds were nuts there, right? He made a couple gutsy ones when you needed him to.
Yeah. The Windy City, Tampa Bay.
Well, no.
I mean, what are we? The winds. Stop.
They have hurricanes
just please
down
stop.
There.
Just
it's
please
South
stop.
Florida.
Just come
Southeast.
On.
I don't know. Bring I actually don't break. Know my geography. I mean, I've never been to Florida. Oreo cookie in Oakland. He says, you can't this is a hot take. You can't compare Purdy to Mahomes. I know. I was sent the graphic. I had to discuss it, all right? Oreo cookie, what's up, man?
Hey, man, like you guys said earlier, those numbers are misleading, man. So what's going to separate Purdy and Mahomes is what happens in the crunch time, you know, fourth quarter, last minutes of the game. You know, I got to take Mahomes over almost anyone. But as far as what I expect for this this year coming up, I go back to the Spadoni's forget about it circle of trust, and I got three guys for you. We're going to go Lynch, we're going to go Kyle, and we're going to go Robert Saleh. Now, these guys have built a bully, tore it down. And I believe in them that they're going to build a bully again. So I want to look forward to this year is when it's third and long or even third and short, I want to get off the field. The defense has to get off the field. That starts with the defensive line stopping the run and pressuring the quarterback. And I think we're going to do it this year. We're going to be back in the playoffs. Let's go.
Let's go. Oreo cookies fired up. All right. circle of trust factor, and we don't worry, we'll have our circle of trust throughout the season when it comes to the 49ers, because I do have trust in the head coach. How could you not? But this is going to be the litmus test if he sticks around going forward, is this relationship with this quarterback and Brock Purdy. And what is it going to be this season? And by all accounts, he loves the guy. That's great. There's going to be moments, though, this season where you might see Shanahan yelling at Brock Purdy, and people are like, oh, no, is this bad? Is this bad? No, that's good. It's called creative tension. Brady and Belichick yelled at each other on the sideline, okay? And I think they're the greatest head coach quarterback tandem of all time, all right? That's okay. I need a little bit more of that. I need a little bit more of maybe it's a Nick Bosa on the defensive end or Fred Warner getting on guys and getting on these rooks. No, seriously. Like, I would like to see more of that.
They did that last year, and Debo got specialty. What? I mean,
real quick, I don't mean my wide receiver one yelling at the long snapper, okay? Hey, Debo, how about you get at, you know, I don't know, the Jacob Cowings of the world. Not Tabor Pepper, okay? Yes, and Debo, by the way, did you guys see?
Honestly, they should have judo chopped him weeks ahead of time. Like, I would have done it to the special teams coach.
Did you see the most awkward interview of my lifetime of this past week? It was Mike Garofolo of NFL Network. Had a sit down with Debo Samuel because they were at Washington's training camp. And Garofolo was like, oh, yeah, by the way, you can't give me a high five because they were saying goodbye to each other because you jammed your finger, Debo. I was like, oh, wait. I shouldn't have said that. And then Debo just looked at him like it was just silence for like 5 seconds. It was the most awkward. By the way, the most awkward interview ever at 95.7 was almost always Debo Samuel stuff. You had to make sure you had 30 questions available because you had to rat-a-tat-tat him every single time because he's giving you five or six word responses. You have to be good. You got to be on your toes with Debo Samuel. The jam finger, by the way, for Debo already. So something to monitor.
I mean, Debo, but you know, the Brock Purdy thing, back to him, and it's him and Kyle. They go hand in hand to me. They do. They were awful in the red zone. The amount of times that this team stalled out in the red zone, is that a CMC byproduct? Is that play calling? Is that quarterback? Is that decisiveness? I'm sure it's all those things. You went from the number one team in the league in terms of touchdown percentage in the red zone to 15.
Middle of the pack.
It's if they can get back into that top 7-8, they're going to be a really good team. And to me, they all go together. It's Kyle, it's personnel, it's the plays that you're calling, and then it's the quarterback. If they can be more efficient, and also pre-snap penalties really did them in as well. But if you can get back into that top 10 area, then they'll be a really good team.
Are there any question marks that you still have when it comes to Brock Purdy going forward? 888-957-9570. What are those questions? We'll go out to Jonathan in San Francisco, who we just heard on our rejoin. Jonathan, good morning. You're on the Morning Roast.
Hey, good morning, Joe and Joe. Expectation, you guys asked. I honestly don't know, man, but this is my hope. I hope that Brock Purdy is at least above average. And how does he does that? He accomplishes that by having a pretty good offensive line play, you know. Yeah, offensive line needs to be above average. I trust that running game is going to be there. But more importantly, you know what they need to do, man? They need to release George Kittle. I don't want to see George Kittle playing offensive line 90% of the time he's on the field, man. They just got to give that guy a chance to abuse linebackers and safeties. And let him run, bro. Let him run and catch pass. I know he's a pretty good run blocker. But dude, he's one of the best catching tight ends in the league. It's criminal that they held him to help out the offensive line all these years, man. They should have been grabbing, catching passes and accumulating yardage as a pass catching tight end. And also, I need to see Brock Purdy connect on deep throws. I'm not saying all the time. I want to see that 3-2 a game, right? To keep defenses honest. They can't do that. It's a passing league. What are we doing, bro? It's going to be inside the numbers all the time again? Hey, man, if they can't make that adjustment, I don't know, right? If they can't throw downfield in a passing league, I don't know what we're going to do.
It's a good point, Jonathan, at the end there, because that is my question I have for Brock still going forward. If you need to lean on this guy's arm, like let's say, like, this is a big possibility. Let's say McCaffrey's not that dude anymore. Let's just say, like, he's just not that guy. By all accounts, he looks great in training camp. Well, let's say
we'll see.
The grind of a regular season is something else, and we shall see. And let's say you have to lean on his arm, Brock's. Like, can he do that? Can the 49ers be a throwing and passing offense and win games that way going forward?
They're never going to be a throw first team.
But if
that's just not, then as long as this guy's coaching, I have a very hard, I mean, it would be a humongous reversal in what he hangs his hat on.
I'm not asking it to be all the time. I'm asking in moments and games and stretches and games when you have to lean and you have to throw from behind to get back into games. Can Brock Purdy do that in this offense? That is a legitimate question mark. I still have.
I mean, that's a question mark. The guy just won the Super Bowl, and people are asking that about Jalen Hurts. I don't think that's exclusive to Brock.
I know, which is ridiculous.
No, I know, but I think there's like four or five guys that we think that can throw from behind. It's Stafford, it's Burrow, it's Josh Allen. I don't even think people think Lamar can throw from behind, which I disagree with, but you know what I'm saying? Like, we're talking about a handful of guys that get the benefit of the doubt, and all the other guys, it's to be determined. I think that this thing about throwing deep, that's actually not a problem for me on Purdy, like throwing deep. I thought he held onto the ball to try to throw deep too much. I think he didn't trust the checkdown options with Jordan Mason, and I think that actually hamstrung their offense more than anything. I thought that teams didn't really honor the running backs in the passing game the way they had before, so you had more guys dropping into coverage, and I think he was holding the ball because he didn't trust the intermediate stuff as much, and I don't think he was as decisive on the check down underneath stuff. I actually go in the other direction. I have very little issues with his arm and the deep ball throwing and the intermediate throwing. It's more like, do they trust the guys underneath? That's where I fall down.
Well,
on
that's
this.
And then it comes to separation, right? Like, you need to be able to separate at the top of these routes. And can Ricky Pearsall be that dude?
Because he had a monster day Saturday.
He had a monster day, but is he even doing one-on-one drills?
Like, no, he's killing it in 11-on-11.
Kyle Shanahan.
Before we move on, that's where I go. Yeah, you also have no D'Amino Lenore out there, and you know Renardo Green's out, so you have a bunch of nobodies. In the secondary.
Injury bug going around the 49ers training camp right now, by the way. I don't feel great about this. I know I was gone for a little
McKivitz
bit.
McKivitz has missed time. Jennings has missed time.
Rando's hurt.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, there's a lot. Mikel Williams is nursing an ankle. Yeah. Like, there's a lot. It's not about, like, who's healthy, who's not. It's who can go every day.
That's exactly right. And Kyle,
I think they're thin.
Yes, and Kyle Shanahan spoke about easing Ricky Pearsall back into practice last week.
We're just still trying to get Ricky back, you know, we're easing him in. I think he got, you know, we gave him, I think he had one practice back or two, you know, just 8 plays. Then he got one off. And then today, I think he got 8 plays again. So we're easing him back in. It'll get there. We're just trying to make sure he can last throughout camp.
And I would love, and we talked about this the last couple weeks, Joe, like if I could come away from this season and that Brock and Ricky Pearsall connection could be my number one connection going forward, that would be massive. Obviously, George Kittle is going to be a part of that. And I heard Jonathan, and I think Jonathan speaks for a lot of 49er fans, where they're like, Kittle's our best pass catcher. Like, he's our best receiver. Why don't we use him more? Well, part of what makes the 49ers offense and Kyle Shanahan's run offense so great is a part of that is George Kittle blocking. So, like, I understand and I hear you, but, like, you can't be mad at the running game doing well. Like, that's part of what George Kittle does them. And then you can't also be like, oh, I'm upset all the time. No. Part of what makes this offense run is George Kittle being so unique. And I get it. Today's NFL, I think we're so fantasy football. So we see the Trey McBrides and the Brock Bowers and all the targets that they get. It's like, why can't we have George Kittle? Well, look at those teams. Who are they? It's the Cardinals and the Raiders. Like, they don't have really anyone else.
And George gets great yards per catch, yes. And he has great run after the catch. They actually used him in the red zone after, like, the fourth week way better.
Yes.
And it felt like they realized that their own issues in the red zone were because they didn't have CMC. I think they missed CMC way more in the red zone than I even wanted to admit.
Yes. No, especially in the passing game when it come to all of that, right?
Formation, versatility, and honoring all these motions pre-snap. They really missed him.
You know what I'd like to see a little bit more? And I see it all the time with Andy Reid. And whenever we call these guys like geniuses, and we saw it in the Super Bowl, give me some more. And I know it's not gimmicks, one more trick play bag for Shanny. I would like to see some more creativity in the red zone.
He doesn't necessarily call plays for guys.
No.
Like, he calls plays. Like, you don't see a split out wide. You're running either the slant or the fade, and it's your choice. It's an option route. Like, you don't see that a lot, the ISO play.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You got to isolate the mismatches. And this is when it comes to audibling. This is when it comes to Brock Purdy and the next evolution of his game, Joe, is getting up on the line and seeing a mismatch. Oh, I got a 5'8" corner on George Kittle right now, one-on-one, and every single time. And then that's when I have to signal to my quarterback. That is what's going to be that next evolution of Purdy's game. You saw it with the Bradys of the world. You saw it with the Mahomes of the world, Lamar, everyone. It's being able to isolate those mismatches in the passing game, whether it's Christian McCaffrey, right? Take him out of the backfield, all right?
I also think not having Debo is going to help them in the red zone. Debo was great from the 40 yards, from 40 out. He was so much better in the red zone. He gets no immediate separation.
No, it was as you would like to say, it was constipated.
He was very predictable. They threw a backward screen in the Viking game. I don't know if you guys remember. It was so bad.
I do remember that.
It almost got picked. It was so bad. And it was like, because the Debo stuff became very predictable. I think actually not having him is going to be it's going to really free up the offense. You're not going to feel this like, got to get it to Debo here.
Well, Debo Samuel is playing in Washington, and there's a current disgruntled Washington player that has requested a trade. His name is Terry McLaurin. And on the other side, we're going to discuss why the 49ers should be very, very interested. And there's a relationship between the 49ers and Washington that obviously goes back to this offseason when it comes to Debo. Amongst other things, Adam Peters being that relationship. But in the meantime, injury report. And the phone lines are open. Leroy in Oakland, we will get to you on the other side. 888-957-9570. That's the number to call or text the Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line. And speaking of Boxer and Gerson, this is the injury report. And Giants infielder Wilmer Flores exited Friday night's game in New York against the Mets with left hamstring tightness after legging out an infield single. He didn't start Saturday or Sunday for San Francisco and isn't expected to land on the injured list. We'll see, though. Hammies could be difficult or trifficult. Shout out Bluey. The injury report was brought to you by Boxer and Gerson, Northern California's premier workers' compensation law firm, helping injured workers get their lives back for over 40 years. What's coming up with the game is brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. More of your calls, more of your texts. Diving into 49ers training camp as the road to Levi's starts on Thursday. It officially starts with joint practices, because that's when the pads will be popping. There's going to be some nastiness. You're going to have some scuffles going on. It's going to be Denver. They have a very good defense, one of the best in the league. And we're going to be seeing some old friends this week, Joe. Will we see Dre Greenlaw and Talanoa Hufanga? Very interesting. And will the 49ers regret moving off from those players? Something we'll discuss as the show goes on with Spadoni and Shasky in the Morning Roast, 95.7 The Game.